The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The plethora of available options can make our health decisions complicated. Welcome to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with Stacey Starling. Our program is designed for you to question, take charge of your health, and find out which resources in healthcare and human services are available for you. Now, here is your host, Stacey Starling.
This is your host, Stacey Starling. You're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. On today's show, we're adding to the conversation on considerations in care when faced with a dementia or Alzheimer's diagnosis. Joining me is my guest, Tammy Newman. Tammy is a certified dementia practitioner, and you can find Tammy at www.conversations-in-care.com. After today's show, you can find Tammy's contact information and some important informational links on our website, starlingcenter.org, on the radio tab. Remember to like the Starling Center on Facebook, contact me on LinkedIn, follow me on Twitter. All of these links can be found under our show links. And if you have any questions about today's topic, email them to radio@starlingcenter.org, and we will do our best to answer your questions during the last segment of today's show. Tammy, thank you for joining me today. I'm pleased to have you back.
You know what? Thank you for having me. I had such a great time the first time I was on the show, so thank you so much for thinking of me.
Absolutely. You know, as a dementia certified practitioner, you have a wealth of knowledge and expertise to share with us. And certainly this is a topic that's out there that people want to know more about. So really looking forward to today's conversation.
Absolutely. And, you know, as the numbers rise, there's a lot to know.
Good. Why don't we kick it right off with, discussing the diagnosis in meaning. So what does a dementia diagnosis mean for an individual?
You know, absolutely. That's a great place for us to start. And really, when someone is diagnosed with dementia, simply put, all that means is that they've been diagnosed with a set of symptoms. So with dementia, some of the symptoms that people might see, there might be some changes in memory, some changes in thinking, language, judgment, reasoning, and behavior. So really what's happening is dementia is really just describing that certain set of symptoms.
When you talk about some of these changes, is it an expected change, like the language will change to something, or is it any range? It's just different from what the person was.
It's different than what the person was. So there might be memory lapses that you might start to see. When it comes to language, they might have a more difficult time being able to come up with words. Those are some of the things. Judgment-wise, you might see that they're doing more things where they might be giving away more money, or they might not be dressed appropriately for the seasons. So there's a definite change in their judgment, and things are much different than what they used to be.
Do you link judgment with behavior, or is there a distinction there?
You know what? I link judgment a little bit separately from behavior, because later in the disease, there are different behaviors that do present themselves that are just part of the disease process and part of what's happening with the changes in the brain.
Can you give us an example?
They could be anything. There could be things such as behaviors in hoarding. They start to hoard things, or it could be that they could be screaming out. There could be behaviors that are actually triggered by something that is a way for them to communicate later in the disease. So, for example, later in the disease, they may lose their ability to speak at all. So there's really not a way for them to communicate to us if they're in pain, or if they're cold, or if they're hot, or if they're hungry, or even if they have to go to the bathroom. So some of the behaviors that you see are really technically a way that they're communicating with us. So the potential for someone to scream is potentially that they're trying to really communicate with you. And that's something that we can definitely talk about a little bit later, but some of those behaviors are really ways that they're trying to reach out and communicate with you.
Okay, so something needs to be said and we need to pay attention. I'm sure we'll get more to that later in the show. How about right now, if you help us to understand how Alzheimer's is similar or different than dementia?
You know, Stacey, I'm really glad that you asked this question because there's a lot of confusion around Alzheimer's and dementia. And everyone thinks that they're kind of two separate things and they're or the same thing. Excuse me, I misspoke there. They tend to think that they're the same thing and they're not. And the easiest way for me to describe this is kind of giving an example. Dementia is an umbrella term, just like the term cancer is. So you get the diagnosis of cancer, but there's many different types of cancer. You have breast cancer, pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, and dementia is the same way. So Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. And there's over 70 different types of dementia. I wish that I could name them all off, but I don't remember them all.
That would be a lot to keep up in your mind, for sure.
Absolutely. But a lot of times also some of that confusion comes with Alzheimer's is the most common type of dementia. So we see about 60 to 80% of the cases being Alzheimer's. And then our second most common is something that's called vascular dementia. And what this is, we see this when someone's been having a series of strokes over the years. And that's why we usually see that as the second most common.
Do they present themselves differently? Are the symptoms different, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
That's a really good question. Now, when it comes to something such as Alzheimer's and vascular dementia, they do tend to present symptom-wise very, very similar. However, there is another type of dementia that is called frontotemporal degeneration. This type of dementia also, there's declines in things such as memory and thinking and language and judgment. But what we see with this type of dementia is that we see the decline in judgment and reasoning first. So families will say, my husband is doing the strangest things. He was a kind man, and now he's being very vindictive and going out and doing some really strange things. And so we see them in a different arrangement, basically. So what happens, and then with the frontotemporal, we see memory loss as one of the very last things that comes about, where with something like Alzheimer's or vascular dementia, memory loss is typically one of the first things that we see.
Okay. All right. How can we be sure we're getting an accurate diagnosis? It all seems very complex, right? And similar. A lot of the symptoms present very similarly. So how do we know we're getting an accurate diagnosis for our loved one?
You know what? That's additionally a really wonderful question. And typically we see most people, when they start seeing these symptoms in their loved one, the first step is they typically take them to a family physician. So that family physician will kind of look at what's going on, maybe look at medications, maybe look at some of their past history and say, yeah, you know, it looks like your loved one has dementia. At that point, really what our next step is, after we've kind of looked through the medications to make sure there's nothing contraindicated, and once we've looked through anything physical to make sure there's nothing physical that's causing this memory loss, then what the next thing is that we really need to go and have a consult with a neurologist. The neurologist can then do more tests, PET scans, CAT scans, other types of mental exams to see what type of dementia this is. And it's really important that we get an accurate diagnosis, because how we treat Alzheimer's disease in the first stages and how we treat frontotemporal, they're going to be two totally different things. So some of the medications that we might use to manage some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's is going to be totally different than that of frontotemporal degeneration.
That sounds like a key consideration. If I'm supporting my loved one, I need to make sure that I have a clear understanding of that diagnosis so that we're getting the right treatments. What are some other key considerations when we are supporting a loved one who's been diagnosed with dementia?
You know, I think some of the key considerations, especially when we get that first initial diagnosis, not only is it, like we said, to go to a neurologist, but the other piece of that is that we really need to sit down with that person while they're still able to have a lucid conversation and go over some things. Ask to see, do they have a durable power of attorney in place? Have they decided who they want to be their advocate for medical things? Do they have someone that they want to handle financial situations? I would also have the conversations with them in regards to things such as, you know, Mom, I may have promised you a long time ago that I would never put you in a care center, but we really need to consider that if there's a point in time where you're not safe, I may have to make that decision. What would you like me to look into? And getting their idea of what they feel would be comfortable for them. So those are some of the things that I would look at, having those conversations, making sure those papers are in place. If they're not in place, making sure that you go to a lawyer to get those in place, you know, and also financially making sure that somebody's there to handle those things as well.
If I am interpreting this correctly, Tammy, a thing that comes to mind for me is that on the onset with that original diagnosis, when people still have most of their sense of what their reality is or has been that they have lived with up until today, they're probably in the best spot to say what their wishes are. Uh-huh. And based on life experiences so far, right, their current reality. But as they progress in their disease, and that may change, how does that come into the equation? What happens then?
What happens then in regards to the care that the family?
Yes. Given? So there may have been agreements up front around going to a care center. And what happens if that shifts over time as somebody's advancing into their disease?
Well, and that's why I do think it's so important that once they're at a place where they are fairly able to still make their needs known, that mm-hmm. those things are really recorded and that the family really understands those concerns. However, the family also does need to be able to equip themselves with some knowledge that probably when it does come time that you may have to make a decision to put someone into a care center, that they may be resistant to that. And you need to prepare yourself as that caregiver, that loved one, of how you're going to handle this. And there's definitely some books and there's some people out there that can help you with that transition and how to do this and what's the best way. And that goes into some communication styles and tips, such as what we call therapeutic fibbing. But that's something that we can talk about a little bit later. But it is, I would prepare myself as well for when that time comes, how we're going to handle that situation.
In your experience in supporting families, what are some common initial responses that you hear after a loved one's been diagnosed?
You know, unfortunately, because there is not a cure for dementia, for Alzheimer's, unfortunately, this is the initial responses are being fearful, being uncertain, being scared, feeling overwhelmed by what's happening. And, you know, family members are probably overwhelmed by the fact that, wow, now I'm going to have to start taking care of Mom. I might have to be there more often. There's things I might have to do for her. So I think there's, a lot of things that go on. I think on occasion you might hear someone say, oh, wow, you know, I'm glad to know that there's actually a reason for what's happening. But most of the responses initially are really of fear and uncertainty.
So as, you know, people settle into that fear and uncertainty, you know, we obviously at some point in time hope that there's a transition. This is a critical transition in their lives, and perhaps there is a transition towards acceptance and living with this new reality. And what does that look like?
You know, that's such an interesting question, because I think this concept of shifting towards acceptance is one that has not really been seen that much, but is something that is really changing. And what I mean by this is that oftentimes people might be in denial, or they may not go and get the education that they need to really help them go towards acceptance. And I think that's one of the key things. I think that when someone is diagnosed with this disease, I think as soon as you have the ability, after you've kind of worked through some of these emotions that you're feeling, to go and really do your education. I think when, especially the loved ones, the caregivers, when they're able to do that education, understand the disease, see what's going to happen and could possibly happen as the disease progresses, and that they've really educated themselves for what's going to happen, I think it's much easier to be able to accept the disease because they're prepared for what's going to happen in the future.
What are some of the resources out there that come to mind for you? I mean, clearly the internet is accessible to folks, but maybe that's not the best source of information. What else is out there for people?
You know what? There's a ton of information out there. And I would say, especially when you first get diagnosed with this disease, I think one of the most important places to go to is to the Alzheimer's Association, to their website. And that's www.alz.org. And the reason that I suggest going to this website is that it's chock full of information that is very readable and very understandable. So you can even go there if you are starting to see that there's some changes in your loved one. You can go there. There's a great list that talks about the 10 warning signs and symptoms. There's a great checklist that you can even print off and take with you when you go to the doctors. That way you can kind of go through and say, this is what I've seen in these 10 different warning signs. It additionally gives you some information on when you go to the doctor, what are some of the things that you should bring with you? Also, when you're first diagnosed with this disease, the Alzheimer's Association has done a wonderful job in giving a great overview. There's a lot of interactive tools to really educate you on this disease. And on top of it, what you can find here is they have a 1-800 number that you can call. And with that 1-800 number, they can connect you to all sorts of resources within your area. So if you're the type of person that really wants to go one-on-one with someone within the Alzheimer's Association, they do have care partners that can help you do some care planning. And what are your next steps? They have great support groups. So they're support groups for caregivers of those with dementia. They've also started a support group, which is absolutely wonderful, which is one for those that are newly diagnosed. So those that are newly diagnosed can go to this support group and meet with other people that have been newly diagnosed with this disease as well. And it's a great support group because it brings both the person that's been diagnosed and their caregiver together in a group. And then they kind of separate off and talk caregiver to caregiver. And then also people that have been diagnosed, they can talk together as well. So it's a great place to start really researching some of those things. And there's so many more resources. I don't know how much more you want me to share at this point in time, but there's some other great resources out there as well.
Well, we can certainly come up and discuss some more of those later in the show. A question I have for you before we go to break. You are advocating that the Alzheimer's Association is a great place for people to gather tools, resources, and education. And my question is, do they make the distinction between dementia and Alzheimer's in that information, or should we just assume that it would apply across the board in these early stages?
That's a really great question. And when the Alzheimer's Association was first started years and years and years ago, the name of the Alzheimer's Association was Alzheimer's and Related Diseases. So a lot of what that basic information, it does talk about some of the other different types of dementias that you'll see. It also gives you some of those warning signs that you can look through. So it won't go totally in depth like it does later in that website when you really want to learn more about Alzheimer's. But especially when you're in those beginning stages and trying to figure things out, it's a great resource to kind of look at, could this be, what does frontotemporal look like? What does Huntington's look like? What is vascular dementia? So it does give you a brief overview so that you're able to then make that decision, once you met with the neurologist, to make that decision and get the information that's particular to your type of dementia.
All right. Very good, Tammy. We're going to head to break. When we return, we'll pick up our conversation and really look at more ways of supporting our loved ones if they are faced with dementia or an Alzheimer's diagnosis.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
You read about it in health news every day.
Cancer rates are going up. Obesity in the U.S. is on the rise. Heart disease and diabetes are top killers every year.
We can follow the advice of our doctor, but cravings persist. Weight goes up and energy is still down. It doesn't have to be like this. Tune in for Body Balance Talk with your host, Jeannie Schmidt, along with Lucy and Madeline. You'll learn how you can work with your body to feel better and look better, too. Body Balance Talk airs live every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Cancer is not something to be taken lightly, but instead of being talked at by doctors, medical providers, and others, wouldn't it be nice to hear from a host who has worked at the Cancer Coalface for 38 years as a caregiver, supporter for 14,000 patients, and who has had the experience of having a life-threatening condition herself? You will hear the stories of survivors and other people who work in breakthrough cancer medicine. Navigating the Cancer Maze with host Grace Galler will help you with the facts, planning, and grief experienced with different forms and stages of cancer. Listen every Friday at 12 noon U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you're joining the conversation, this is your host, Stacy Starling, and you're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Joining me today is Tammy Newman. We are adding to the conversation on considerations in care when faced with a dementia or Alzheimer's diagnosis. Boy, that was a mouthful for me to get out right there. I apologize for that. Tammy, thank you so much for being here today. Why don't we jump right in again and talk about some of the biggest challenges in working with people and families around dementia care. Share with us your experience.
That's a great question. And I think some of the biggest challenges are when if a family is in denial in regards to the diagnosis, that can be a very, very difficult challenge. Because sometimes some families, depending on what the family dynamic was prior to this diagnosis, they may feel as though, you know, mom's just doing that. That's how she's behaving, and don't understand the concept that what's happening and how she's acting has to do with her brain and this disease really deteriorating the brain inside. So I think when people have denied or they are trying to say that it is something else that it isn't, that becomes a very difficult way to really work with someone. I think one of the really big key things, and I think this is where sometimes as a healthcare community, we have not necessarily done a great job, but it's something that we're working to really try to do a little bit better, is that we really haven't given the families a good blueprint of what to do next. Mm. And one of the key things is really being educated. So one, being educated on the disease process, what can happen, what are some of the behaviors that might happen. And then also the next piece that we sometimes don't do is really educating people on how to communicate with their loved one with Alzheimer's, because this communication style is so different than what we typically do. So we're not able to have a typical conversation with someone with dementia with Alzheimer's. Additionally, at some points within the disease, they can no longer even communicate with us. So they might still be able to talk, but the words that are coming out are kind of like a word salad. So you have to try to piece together what it is that they're really communicating to you. So this is where caregivers have to become very educated and very flexible and hugely creative on how to work with their loved one with dementia. So I think those are some of the challenges that we're facing. And I think as we're learning more and as our practitioners and our physicians are giving the diagnosis and really trying to help them understand what some of the next steps are, I think that's where some of the challenges lie.
What you talk about learning to communicate differently. So where does somebody go to learn some of those strategies, or what are those strategies? Can you offer us some, you know, idea of what you're speaking to?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And there's all sorts of places that you can go to learn these strategies. There is a wonderful book. There's an author by the name of Karen Tyrell, and she wrote a book that's called Cracking the Dementia Code. And the reason that I suggest this book is that how she's written this book, this is for the everyday person to read. It doesn't have a lot of medical mumbo jumbo that none of us care to look up in another book. And especially working with someone with dementia, we need to have something clear, concise, and quick for us to be able to put our hands around and understand. And she really talks about how it is that you need to start learning how to communicate with your loved one. So if there's anything that you can take from this, if there's one mantra that you can take from this situation, is that you need to enter their world. Mm-hmm. So make that your mantra. I need to enter their world. If you make that your mantra, you'll start to kind of figure out that having that communication with them is going to be much different. And I'm going to give you kind of an example. It's kind of a backwards example, more or less, but one of the things when I started out in this industry, one of the biggest things that we really held tight to in this industry was something called reality orientation. So with reality orientation, what that meant is that we really wanted to work with the people with dementia and keeping them focused on what year it was and what was happening. Now, with dementia, what happens is the person is having a problem with short-term memory. So that's what's being affected, is that short-term memory. So what's happening today is something that they're not going to retain. And what happens as they progress through the disease, it's almost like, I don't know if you've seen the movie Benjamin Button.
Yes.
So Benjamin Button basically aged backwards. He was this little old man, and then he kind of aged backwards until he was a baby. So if we think about the concept of aging backwards, someone with Alzheimer's, what's happening in their brain is they're basically aging backwards because that short-term memory is being damaged. So they could be on any certain day in a different part of their memory. So they could be at a point where, for example, they want to see their mom. And I had this situation happen when I was back in quite a few years ago. I won't tell you how long. I was working, and the concept, like I said, was reality orientation. And this woman came up to me and she said, I really want to see my mom. And I was trained to tell her, you know, no, your mom's been dead for about 10 years now. And let's think about that. If this is the first time you're hearing that your mom's been dead, this is something you're going to be upset about. You're going to cry.
Sure.
So this woman basically started grieving her mother's death over again. She was crying. She was hysterical. I'm upset because why isn't she coming back to reality? So here in this situation, not only was this resident upset, but then I was upset too. So this just escalated things. So I give this as an example so that you can kind of understand that the reason that we go into communicating in a different way is so that, one, that person with Alzheimer's really has a good quality of life. And number two, as a caregiver, you'll find out this is one of the most challenging times in your life. And you really need to be able to have tools in your back pocket that you can use with that person with dementia.
It sounds like reality orientation is really more for the individuals who are the caregivers. It makes us feel better trying to impose current reality on the individual who's been diagnosed with dementia. So I can see how that really falls short of supporting that person to have a good quality life. Really appreciate some of those examples that you gave, helping us to understand that when we offer some of that shocking news, we are really triggering their own grieving again and again and again and again, because they don't have that memory of having heard it before. And right. how that is, that must be overwhelming for that individual as an experience.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very devastating process. And it's, and to have that person relive that again and again, mm-hmm. you know, and to be honest with you, you know, my father passed away 6 years ago. Do I want to relive that experience over and over? I don't. I don't, not at all. So we have to really start thinking about placing ourselves in their shoes. And really, that's where some of this education of understanding how the disease progresses, how there might be a point in time that they will not recognize you as their daughter or their spouse, and how to work around that, and being able to understand that this is not something that they're doing to you personally, that this is unfortunately what this disease does. And I think if we can have that understanding and then learn these key things to do in regards to working with someone, I think it's a great way for us to really kind of work towards that acceptance.
And perhaps some of the support groups that you've mentioned can also support family members to accept that, you know, it's okay. The white fib or the little white fib is okay, because you're adding to dad's quality of life rather than, you know, putting him in a state of distress on a regular basis. I've heard people talk about that. I can't lie to my mother. I can't lie to my father. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know what, that is a common thing that it is stated. I can't lie to my mom. I can't lie to my dad. And to be honest with you, I don't look at it as lying to your mom or dad. I look at it in a different frame. I've kind of framed that differently. Mm-hmm. We're looking at providing quality of life for mom or dad. And a lot of times it might not even be that you even have to tell a fib. Yes, on occasion, you may just have to tell a fib, because if we're looking at safety or other things, or sometimes even your sanity, sometimes that white lie is really going to help us. But let's take a quick look at the situation I was telling you about. So I had this resident that came to me and said that she wanted to see her mother. And oftentimes, sometimes that statement, I want to go home or I want to see my mom, sometimes that's just a way of communicating that maybe they're not feeling safe, or they feel that they're in a surrounding that is different and they're feeling unsure. And something like that, one of the things that I might have done with her is I might have started a conversation with her. Sally, can you tell me about your mom? So at this point in time, I start interacting with her and she starts to tell me all these wonderful memories about her mom. So I have the ability to change that aspect and kind of talk to her about her mom, which is going to be a comforting experience. So that's one of the ways that we're able to really look at these situations and communicate differently. You know, and at the same time, you have the ability to use the short-term memory loss to your advantage. Talk with her for a few minutes, and then the conversation may change to, I'm hungry, or let's go do this, because now they felt comforted and they can move on to the next thing. Does that make sense?
Oh, it's a great strategy. And so instead of really addressing that very specific question, you engage them around storytelling and past memories of that person. So you're just redirecting the conversation, essentially.
Essentially, I am. And just kind of looking to see what it is, what are their needs? What are some of the feelings that they have mm-hmm. right now that really need to be validated? So that's one way that you're going to be able to do this. You know, and as I said, when you're a caregiver to someone with Alzheimer's, you have to be very flexible, because this might work today, then we might realize that it might not work tomorrow. So being able to have a skill set or the tools to understand what's going on is very important.
Great. How about some of the biggest rewards in working with folks in dementia care?
You know, I have found this to be one of the most rewarding things, is to have been able to work with people with dementia. And one of the biggest reasons is that when someone does have Alzheimer's, one of the things that I know that I'm consistently always trying to find for myself is to live in the moment. And so often I live in the moment for about 30 seconds and then I'm thinking about 20 different other things. And someone with Alzheimer's is probably the ultimate person of living in the moment. And it's such a great thing. And I think there's so much that can be learned. There's so much that can be changed, and changed is really not the word I'm looking for, but when this is happening with your family member, you now have the ability to really maybe have some great conversations and learn some things about your loved one that you never knew. And I think this is one of the rewards that many people have when it comes to working with someone with dementia. And I think additionally, once the family has come to that part of acceptance, because I also look at this part of their life as another phase of their life. If we think about it, when a child is born, we have this baby and we talk to them, we treat them and we care for them in a much different way than when they're teenagers or even once they're in their midlife. So now we're looking at the fact that this is another phase of your parents' life and it might be different, but you can always look at a way that you can find the good pieces of it. There's a woman, she's written a book. It's called My Mom, My Hero. And she talks about her relationship with her mother once she was diagnosed with dementia. And she talked about how this ended up bringing them closer because she was able to, in whether it was every conversation or every interaction, she was able to find something good about it. Even towards the, even as she progresses, when she's not even able to really have that conversation with her, she's now able to hold her mom's hand and be able to get a lot from just that physical touch with her mom. So it's really interesting to see where we can start to gain some really happy moments and some great quality of life with our loved one when dementia is starting to progress.
It sounds as if it. She's looking at how you are. She's giving strategies in how to be present differently. Is that what I'm hearing you talk about, Tammy?
Absolutely. Thank you for clearing that up for me. And that's exactly right. You have to learn how to be present differently. And there was a gentleman. It was a blog post that I read that he wrote about his father going through dementia, and what he really gained from that was. His dad was not an affectionate person when he was younger. His father never hugged. His father never cried. His father never held his hand. And what reward he received once his father was afflicted with Alzheimer's was that his father became very affectionate. So he now was finding so much joy in getting those hugs from his father, being able to be by his bedside and hold his hand and talk with him and cry with him and communicate with him in such a different way. So it was really what he learned is that there was really this gift that was being given to him when his dad was diagnosed with this disease.
Wow. I can just imagine that you share an example of where somebody saw it as a gift and really stepped into that in a beautiful way. And I imagine it could also, you know, be challenging for folks to have their parent act or a loved one act in a different way that is unfamiliar. And now how do I engage in this relationship differently? Sometimes that could be a really wonderful experience and sometimes it might be overwhelming, I imagine. Even if it's what might be perceived as a positive shift. So now somebody is more affectionate. If my husband's never been affectionate with me for the mass of our relationship in this way, growing into that relationship now, this change of relationship could also be challenging.
Absolutely.
So, all right, good stuff. In this last segment here, Tammy gave us a couple of really great book titles and a blog reference. She has spoken about Karen Tyrell and referenced the book, My Mom, My Hero. Good resources out there for you to access if you are looking to support a loved one who's been diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's. We're going to head to break, and on the other side of our break, we're going to come back and continue our conversation. Thanks for listening.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
By making some important changes in your life, you can move forward from where you are to where you wish to be. It is becoming the change you want to see. It can be a sort of experiment, if you will. On Moving Forward, Wellness One Step at a Time, your host, Dr. Serena Wadhwa, will introduce you to ideas that can help improve your health, relationships, and finances. You probably have at least one part of your life that needs improving. Make an appointment now to join us every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you're joining the conversation, this is your host, Stacy Starling, and you're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Today, Tammy Newman is joining me, and we're engaging in a conversation about living with dementia and Alzheimer's and considerations in care. I'd like to start out our last segment by talking about this idea of a transformed view of the disease process. So as we are supporting an individual who has just been diagnosed with dementia and or Alzheimer's, it's a critical transition for that family unit. And what is the possibility of a transformed view of the disease process? And what does this look like within the family unit? Tammy, share your experiences with us.
You know, and I'm glad that you brought up the concept of the family unit, because I'm very much an advocate that once someone is diagnosed with dementia, that we really work with the entire family. So even grandchildren that are young, even friends, because oftentimes what we see is that person with dementia, their friends tend to kind of go away. They don't come around and spend time with that person anymore. And I think it's, you know, a lot of that is, you know, we're afraid of the disease. A lot of it, we don't know how to communicate. We don't know what to say. So I think one of the important things for me is that the whole entire family and friends really kind of rally around this and learn as much as they can and learn how to communicate. So I'm going to take a little for example here, and I'm going to talk about children. So I think this is where we can really be honest and open with kids. Kids are pretty cool because they're very open to different concepts and different things. So I think we can have those conversations with them and talk to them about, you know, why, you know, they might ask the question, why doesn't grandma remember me? So, and we can really talk about that. There's some great books out there for kids that kind of explain the disease, but also with children, they're really able to bring a lot of joy to someone. So being able to give them some of the concepts that we're going to talk about, it's a great way for to get them involved. Additionally, one of the cool things is that with modern technology, and pretty much everyone now has these smartphones, and there's a great app. It's called a Storyteller's app.
Great. A Storyteller's app. Tell me about that.
It's really, really cool. And I just mentioned this along with kids, because our kids nowadays are way more connected than we
yes.
are.
Yes. Yes.
And I think this is such a great device for kids to really figure out how to communicate with one of their family members that has Alzheimer's. So with the Storyteller app, you download the app, it's a free app, and then it has a couple of different sections. So it has one that has pictures where you can show the picture, where it might be just a pretty generic picture. Maybe it's a picture of an airplane, where from there maybe they could start a question. Grandma, did you ever fly on an airplane?
Oh.
So they can start with these pictures to kind of create a story. Additionally, they also have another part of the app that has some story ideas, maybe talking about their job or what was it like to raise children, or Grandma, you lived on a farm. What was it like to milk a cow? So it gives everything that someone might need to really start conversations with that loved one. And because that long-term memory is still intact, it's such a wonderful tool to be able to use with someone with Alzheimer's.
Great recommendation, the Storyteller app. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, and I'll have to look for the link to that for you as well. I'd be happy to share that with everyone.
Great. We'll put that on our website, and you can also probably find it on Tammy's website as well, but we'll definitely share that with our listening audience. Tammy, so you've given us lots of great tips and strategies for effective communication. I'm wondering if there's anything else that's important for us to know.
One of the key things that I think I just kind of wanted to reiterate just really quickly and give a little bit of backstory with it as well is that behaviors are really a way that someone is communicating with you, because they may not have been able to voice it. They may not have been able to show it to you. So what we may consider a behavior is something that they're trying to communicate to you. So when we see something happen, it's your job to kind of be the detective to figure out what it is that they're trying to tell us. There was a situation when I worked in one of the nursing homes. Someone had come in. They said, we think it's time for mom to now be admitted. So we went out and we did a home assessment. And we asked, is mom continent? And they said, mom used to be continent, but probably about 2 weeks ago, she stopped using the toilet. So the family, the person from the nursing home went into the bathroom and saw that there was a full length mirror right in front of the toilet. So they asked when this was installed, and what they learned is that this mirror was installed 2 weeks ago.
Hmm.
So for this woman, she did not recognize the woman in the mirror, because she's that concept of aging backwards. So she was afraid to go to the bathroom. So once they took that mirror down, she was able to use the toilet. So I know this is kind of an extreme example, but this is how we kind of have to really look at, is it something physical? Is mom in pain maybe? Maybe with the season change, we know that mom always before with her arthritis, as winter came about, that she was a little bit more achy. Is it something that, is she cold? Is she too hot? Looking at all these things and really trying to figure these things out for them. Is it the way that I approach them? And this is a really, really important thing, because even though a person with Alzheimer's may lose the ability to communicate with us, one thing that they always can understand, they can understand emotion. Mm-hmm. And they can understand if you're talking to them and your face is kind of in that scowl, they know that you're upset or you're mad. So they may be reacting because of the approach that you took. So it's very important to always remember how you approach that person with Alzheimer's, because they're always going to remember until the day they die. They'll remember and understand emotions.
Really?
So, yes. Yes.
That's a fascinating, fascinating part of the disease process, isn't it?
It's extremely fascinating. So it's a great tool to understand too, because
yes,
it helps you in communicating and understanding that, okay, I need to go take a breather, because at this moment I'm not going to communicate in a nice way to this person.
Right. And so they're going to pick up on the anger.
They're going to pick up on that anger, and just having that understanding of knowing, okay, they're going to pick up on this anger and I'm just going to escalate things. And being able to kind of pull back and take a moment to kind of collect yourself. So just being aware of those simple things will really help in communicating.
I wanted to punctuate a point that you made. I really appreciate the idea, this idea that behavior as communication, and rather than something that's to be managed or changed. And then I also really appreciated that you brought up part of that detective work is looking at the environment, so the person in the environment, and how do we look for clues as to why behavior may have changed based on some of those environment changes. I think that's good information for folks supporting loved ones in a home environment.
Absolutely. And one of the pieces of advice that I have for you is to start taking notes, because that way, if you are sharing the caregiving responsibilities with maybe another sibling or a family member or whoever, a friend, being able to have some communication, because maybe you're starting to see a trend or a certain behavior happens every day right after lunch. There's something there's a key piece to why is this happening after lunch? Mm-hmm. So looking at everything, you have to kind of become, and as you write these things down, you kind of can look at what some of the trends are, what that person's triggers are. So you'll be able to really have the family still be involved as much as possible. And like you said, the concept of managing those behaviors, but really changing that concept to what is she telling me?
It sounds like a lot of these strategies, too, will support family to keep that individual in the setting of choice for as long as possible. So if somebody really wants to stay in the home environment, a lot of these strategies can create a successful caregiving and living arrangement.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously one of the things that we want to try to do is we definitely want to try to keep people at home as much as possible for many different reasons.
Yes.
So these are definite tools that people can use. It's a great way to kind of keep everybody in the loop to be able to do that. But then also realizing that when you're watching what's going on with mom, also making sure that everybody involved is safe, whether it's your mom, if you're starting to notice that she's wandering, you know, how are you going to keep her safe, and looking at things of that nature, and keeping everyone in the loop in regards to things of that.
And at times, I definitely want to make sure that I appreciate the full continuum of service. And so at some point in time, it may be necessary for that 24/7 service. And there are lots of different care environments that are good. It's a good match for individual situations.
Yes. And that's something, too, that you may even want to think about in the beginning stages when your loved one is first diagnosed, to really go and look at these different types of situations. You know, you have things such as nursing homes with secured units or communities that are just dementia focused. So I would definitely go out and see what is in your neighborhood and look at all the different options that are out there and understand those.
Good. We have 4 minutes till the close of the program, and we haven't gotten to any frequently asked questions yet. So, Tammy, I'm going to ask you a couple, and perhaps you can answer them with brief answers so that I can ask more than one. Is that agreeable to you?
Yes, yes.
All right. So one of our frequently asked questions that has popped up is, does dementia turn into Alzheimer's?
That's a frequently asked question, and kind of as we talked about before, dementia is that umbrella term. Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. So it really doesn't mean that dementia is going to turn into Alzheimer's. It means that we need to find that accurate diagnosis of what type of dementia it is.
Okay. How can people prevent getting dementia?
That's a tough one to do very quickly, but there's a few things that as research is going about, some of the things that we see. So, you know, definitely if we keep our heart healthy, we're going to keep our brain healthy, because our heart is pumping all of that great nutrition and blood to our brain. So we want to eat a heart healthy diet. We want to exercise. And exercise, when I say that, it doesn't mean going out and running a 5K or a marathon. It means at least 2 to 3 times a week doing 30 minutes of do a 30 minute walk. So that's not a lot to really keep your brain, you know, at its best. Also, another piece of that puzzle is really being social. We're a social being, and being social really keeps those synapses and all of those neurons firing. And that's what we want to keep doing. So being social, eating well, exercising. And then also, the last one is really challenging your brain. So looking at ways that you can do things differently. So if you're not good at math, do some math, because that's really going to make some new connections for you. So look at things of that nature.
You know, we were talking the other day, as we were discussing today's show, we were referencing, for the listening audience out there, 60 Minutes had a great segment on this on May 4th. Leslie Stahl was the interviewer, and it was Living to 90 and Beyond. So I encourage everyone to take a look at that on CBS. It's a fantastic information is provided, and very interesting research that's being uncovered relative to living to 90 and beyond. So another way to get some more information. We are real close to the end of our program, but say something about how important self-care is for the caregiver.
Self-care is so extremely important. And the reason that it is that there's some statistics out there that the well spouse, if it's a spouse to spouse caregiving situation, that the well spouse passes away before the one with Alzheimer's. So it's very important. If you see that you're getting tired or you need some help, really reach out. It's very important to both your care and also to the person that you're caring for. It's one of the most important things that you do in this caregiving relationship.
And you can probably find lots of different information out there with some of these support groups and the Alzheimer's Association that talk and give strategies for some of the self-care as well, I imagine.
Absolutely.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off, Tammy. I apologize. We're right at the end of this show. I want to thank Tammy Newman for joining me today and sharing all of her valuable information around supporting a loved one who has been diagnosed with dementia and or Alzheimer's. And you can find Tammy at www.conversationsincare.com. All of Tammy's information will be on our website following the show. Remember that you can get more information about things that we discussed today on our radio tab. Again, thank you for listening. Please join us next week when we have Elaine Williams joining us, and we are going to talk about her book that's been published, The Sacred Work of Grandparents Raising Grandchildren. Thank you for listening.
Thank you again for joining us this week for Murmuration, Critical Transitions, and Transformation. Please join your host, Stacy Starling, for another edition next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll answer more of your questions next week.